Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check out my site when you get a chance and use it to your advantage. It's all free, including our newsletter, which we'll send to you every Sunday by email, and our blog, which we'll send you Monday through Friday, or you can just come and get it at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget all the other things you can do there, including you can check out both of my books, the new books up on the site there, 3 Minutes to Success. And by the way, the foreword for that book was written by Mr. Arnold Palmer. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's so excited to be here, she doesn't know what to do. Right, Joan?
I'm falling all over myself.
I know.
Can't tell you.
Tell
you. You can hear it in my voice.
Well,
right?
give it a try, Joan. Give it a shot.
I'm trying real hard.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, that's probably as good as it gets with Joan.
Oh yeah.
She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Welcome back, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
When are the cherry blossoms gonna bloom?
I think, well, now there's two different questions there. I was going to say the cherry blossom parade is in early April, but of course that doesn't mean the blossoms are going to bloom then.
Well, that actually means that's when the blossoms will not bloom.
Won't bloom, right.
Isn't that like a natural law or something?
Boy, it never seems to fail. Something usually happens in March to make the blossoms come early.
Yeah, or late or something. I don't know what it is, but... But I was just there, and as you know, last week, and I heard or read something about the blossoms, and I thought, isn't it early for the blossoms? Were they worried that the warm weather was going to make them come out early?
I'm sure they were, yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. We have important things to worry about here in the nation's capital.
Yeah, like what's going to happen to the cherry blossoms.
Right.
So sometime in late March, probably, right?
I would think so, yeah.
It's going to be a ways away then.
Right, and it's tricky. You do get a few... You know, like maybe up to a week where they're at their peak, but no more than that. So it's a very short time frame.
It was unbelievable what a beautiful day it was on Friday in Washington, D.C. We just decided, my friend and I, to walk around a little bit. Outside, it was just like
a
spring.
Good thing you did.
It was like a spring day, Joan.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah. So, I don't know what's going on. Joan, let's talk about what's going on in the world of Kiplinger. And Kiplinger says U.S. consumers are a bit fatigued. Now, what does that mean?
Well, as your listeners probably know, we've been talking about the U.S. consumer as some kind of a marathon runner over the last several years.
Several meaning like 8 or 9 years.
Boy, at least. At times when we thought the economy was going to flag, the consumer kept it going by their continued spending.
If it hadn't been for them, we would have been in big trouble. The world would have been in big trouble.
Right, because businesses were pulling back, but consumers were kind of filling the breach there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point in the economic expansion, or whatever you want to call it, we're seeing just a touch of, as we put it, fatigue in the consumer's ability to continue, you know, that pace of spending.
Mm-hmm. But... fatigue is what's that? How is that going to manifest, though, Joan? Is it actually going to? I mean, it's not actually going to get very bad, is it?
Well, we're saying we're still talking about an increase of spending of 3%. So, I mean, I don't think that's so bad.
Pretty darn healthy, it sounds like to me.
I think they're actually coming back down to earth and getting, you know, a little more sensible, maybe.
Well, and isn't part of that maybe individual fatigue being offset a little bit by all these new jobs that are being created?
Well, that's right. And we do say that business spending is going to pick up. So it just as the consumer may be beginning to come down to earth a little bit, businesses may be able to pick up the slack, we think.
Well, let's just think about this for a minute. If the economy just created, according to Kiplinger, almost 2 million jobs, if the economy is projected, according to Kiplinger, to create another almost 2 million jobs, mm-hmm. that's almost 4 million jobs in 24 months. those jobs have to require people to buy. You know, somebody's got to buy a chair, somebody's got to buy a computer, somebody's got to buy paper, there's got to be, you know, it costs money to put people to work.
Right.
And when those people go to work, they buy new clothes. They feel prosperous and they buy a new television or you know, whatever. Maybe you get some new shoes, whatever happens. That's good for the economy, isn't it?
No question.
So just that one projection that you guys were correct on in 2005, and I believe you're going to be correct in 2006.
Well, thank you.
Just those two projections, you could leverage all kinds of business growth, economic growth, just from those two things.
You sure could.
And it's very, and that's one of the reasons, you know, Joan, we just had Sam Norwood on the show last hour, where he brought us his monthly report of business conditions the last 30 days and the next 60 days, and the report was very good, very heartening.
Wow.
He says they kind of agree with you guys.
Hey.
And so, you guys point out, Kiplinger points out that that the GDP increase in 2006 will be over 3%, but maybe a little bit less than the 3.5% of last year.
Right. So between 3 and 3.5, we're saying not much slower than 3.5. So I guess we're hinting that we're, I guess, a little closer to the high end there.
Well, one thing that you're pointing out that's kind of interesting is that the drag, so to speak, if there is a drag on the economy, is really the middle incomers. Now, what's going on with those guys?
Yeah, and we're defining middle incomers as people who earn between $30,000 and $80,000 a year. And we're saying that they actually represent half of all consumer spending. But
yeah,
we're saying that, you know, interest rate increases are going to hurt. And also, you have an interesting new law that requires pretty much a doubling of the minimum monthly payment on credit cards, which is certainly not necessarily a bad thing, because the minimum payment is still going to be pretty small on very large balances. But I guess it's designed to force people to really try to whittle down their credit card debt more than they have been.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's going to cut into the cash flow.
Sure.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. But you know, even when that happens, Joan, when you make that higher payment, that just frees up more credit on your card.
Exactly.
So it might not turn out to be as bad as they think it does.
Right.
Right? Isn't that how that works?
I think the idea is that you're not supposed to just charge it back up again.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean. And of course, we also know that a lot of the home equity has already been tapped.
Well, sure, it has.
Those loans that create a lot of cash,
right,
went into the marketplace over a number of years. It's been, that equity has been tapped, and if the real estate economy comes down a little bit, which it seems to be maybe a little bit, there won't be as much equity to tap into. Stand by, quick break, 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend, Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we were talking about the home equity that people have been leveraging and doing a lot of different things with. And one of the things they've been doing with it is they've been, you know, sprucing up their houses.
That's right.
And that's a good thing. That makes people feel better, and it improves the value of the properties. But one of the things that happens, Joan, is over the last few years, is as real estate values have gone up, people have said, wait a minute, you know, the house we paid $100,000 for is now worth $200,000. And we only owe $80,000, so that means we got a lot of equity.
Right. Oh.
So they'd go in there and get some of that equity. Well, if values have gone down a little bit, which I think they may have in some parts of the country.
Right.
Interest rates have gone up. So it's all going to come together, I think, to make home equity a little bit of a less, maybe a lot of a less, but maybe certainly a little bit of a less desirable place to go get cash.
Oh, I think so, definitely.
So that may just cool that part of the liquidity of the consumers down a little bit this year. And that's probably not a bad thing, is it?
No, not necessarily a bad thing, but you're right. That is going to be part of what we're talking about in terms of the consumer getting a little bit fatigued.
Right, right. But the good news is, Joan, and isn't this a great way that the economy, the U.S. marketplace, seems to tag team itself. when the consumers are going strong, the businesses were huffing and puffing a little bit. Now the businesses are doing great.
Right.
Businesses have got cash. Small businesses are profitable. They've got pricing power. They're confident of the economy, and so. So, you know, it's a good time for the consumer to take just a little bit of a break.
It sure is.
Not much. We don't want them to take too much of a break. Joan, another thing that's going to bite a little bit this year is energy prices.
Right. And no surprise there. We're not seeing anything, any relief, really, anytime soon.
Yeah. Natural gas prices, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, that's biting a lot of folks. Heating oil, of course, I'm still confused about the winter, Joan. I mean, some places are had cold Decembers and warm Januaries, but I think overall, isn't the U.S. experiencing kind of a mild winter so far?
Well, it sure is in my area of the country. It's just bizarre. Now, it's actually cooled off a little bit. We're only in the 30s this week, but that I think we might have had our warmest January in this area in probably decades.
Mm-hmm. Some of the industries that you guys point out may have to sharpen their pencils a little bit. The restaurant industry, you say, might recede a little bit. I don't know. I talk to more and more people who say, we don't cook. We just eat out all the time.
Right, and that's, well, you would think that the restaurant industry would be doing better. You'd think the grocery stores would be having more trouble.
Well, they are. I mean, that's a tough industry to be in right now, because between people actually thinking that they can save money at Walmart, and that's something I don't get. I'd like to stop for a second and talk about that for a minute, Joan.
All right.
Walmart, I don't mean to pick on Walmart, but folks, don't abandon your local, your neighborhood supermarket. Joan, we don't need to have to go get all of our groceries at Walmart.
Right.
But there's some communities out there that people have decided that Walmart's a great place to save money on groceries, which I don't think is the truth, and they're abandoning their supermarkets. I don't get that, because it's a lot easier, it's a lot friendlier for me to go in and out of my local supermarket, and I just like shopping at supermarkets, Joan. And I don't feel like I've done that when I go to Walmart.
We're probably the only two people in the United States.
Maybe on the planet. What do you think?
I don't know anybody who admits to liking grocery
shopping. I don't
own
any supermarket stocks, folks. But I just think that I'm going to do. Let me put it this way: I don't have a big axe to grind with Walmart, but I just think I'm going to do my part to help the local supermarkets stay in business, because I think they perform a great service. Well, we don't eat out all that much, especially at night. But anyway, that's restaurants might want to take a look at their numbers a little bit. The clothing folks, the apparel vendors, you say, may have to offer a little more of a discount. Joan, as long as you and my wife are alive, Joan, I don't see this happening.
We'll keep them going. Don't worry.
I believe that. automobile purchases and upgrades for cars. What's going on there, Joan?
Well, we're talking about a decline in car sales, and it might not seem a lot to you, but I think this is significant, going down from 16.9 to 16.7 million. You know, that's an important driver of the economy, especially at this point when we've been talking about the difficulties that the big three automakers have been having.
So that's, what, 200,000 cars?
Yes. If I've done my math.
That's a lot of cars.
It sure is.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's enough of a ripple. But here's the question. Is 16.9 a big number? You see what I mean? Relative to,
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it probably is.
Yeah, I think it is.
But now that is an industry that's part of that industry, the automobile industry, at least part of it, the American element of the automobile industry, is in disarray.
No question.
Big problems there on many levels, and the bad news is, Joan, all of their problems have not been made manifest yet, have they?
That's right.
Still a lot to come, and it'll be interesting and in some cases sad to report and to track what's going on there. Quick break. We're going to take a quick one, and we'll be right back after these messages with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blasingame. The show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administaff.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. But there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, moving over to business costs, and this is going to impact, you know, the businesses, America's businesses' ability to keep the economy going. Natural gas prices are not going to abate. In fact, you guys say they're actually going to head up in the spring. Now that's that for the average person listening, you know, they're saying, well, what do I care about that? Because by the spring, I won't need natural gas. But a lot of electricity is made by natural gas, isn't it?
That's right. And in fact, we're saying hot weather and rising demand for electricity will reignite the market. You know, just don't assume that once winter's over, you don't have to think about natural gas. And the weird thing here is that we're saying the warm weather that we were just talking about has kind of lowered demand for natural gas over the winter months, which was not expected.
Right. But there seems to be some kind of an insidious effect of that, Joan. It almost seems like when demand goes down, the suppliers raise their prices to make up for it.
Right, which is kind of bizarre, but
you know, I remember when back in the 70s and 80s, Joan, when they were trying to get us all, especially in the 70s, they were trying to get us all to conserve electricity, right?
Right.
So we all did that. We bought heat pumps and we insulated like heck, and we did a lot of things to save electricity. Guess what? It worked like a charm. Next thing I knew, the utility companies were saying, hey, you guys have cut back so much, we can't pay our bills. Therefore, we're raising our rates.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
What happened is we were colder, but we had the same electricity bill.
Right.
You know, there's something evil about that, that little scheme, Joan.
That's right.
So anyway, that happened back then. And so that's when I went to natural gas. When I hit 40, I said, you know what, this heat pump thing, it's not working for me. Okay. So gas prices are up. By the way, Joan, I want you guys to go back and recalculate your cost per million BTU of natural gas.
Uh-oh.
Because I had my crack crew of researchers here in my office check things out, and we're doing, you say, Kiplinger says the average price for natural gas is $12 per million BTUs.
Yeah.
Around here, we're paying closer to 20.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, I it's hard for me to believe we're on the high end, you know, and everybody else is that much below us. I mean, that means somebody had to be getting it for less than 12 to have an average.
Right.
Go back to your guys and tell them to check their numbers there a little bit.
I'll tell them Jim told them to.
That's exactly right.
That'll make them do it right away.
But I think you are correct about this next thing, and that's the gas.
Oh, thank you.
That's the crude oil prices. Tell us about that.
Do I have to? I really don't want to say this number.
It hurts, doesn't it?
$75 a barrel? A new... Now, I don't know what nominal record means, but I guess maybe it means if you don't look at it in terms of constant dollars.
That's exactly what it means. In terms of
you have to
dollars...
factor in inflation, I guess.
Not in terms of inflation. It's a new high on a dollar per oil, per barrel of oil basis.
Right. So we may not be exceeding the crazy prices back in the 70s.
Which would have to be about 90.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But the new norm is $70 a barrel, which is just disgusting.
It's hard to believe.
But now, what does this next bit of information mean, Joan? The Mideast share of U.S. oil supply is declining as hoped because Algeria, Nigeria, Angola, the Ivory Coast are getting into the market, what's that going to mean to us?
Well, I think what we're saying is, overall, if you see world oil supplies and you realize that the Middle East has a smaller share of it, that's probably good, since look at how volatile it is and how difficult that region is. However, I'd prefer, if I'm going to see other countries take a bigger share, I'd prefer to see it maybe, I don't know, it's with some of our more friendlier countries.
Like Canada.
And what we're saying is, right, what we're saying is the new sources are in Africa, and those governments in many cases are also very shaky.
It's not exactly a comforting thought to think that Angola might take over as a leading oil supplier, replacing Saudi Arabia.
Right. That's why we say it may be a case of winning the battle and losing the war.
Right. Exactly.
At least losing another battle.
Another thing, Joan, just one more quick thing before we go to the break. Cheaper cement is coming in from Mexico, and that's a big deal. And it's happening because the import tariffs have been slashed because of the relationship,
uh-oh,
the new trade relationships between Mexico. I say new, the newer trade relationships between Mexico.
Right.
And we need that cement to be cheaper because of some of the worldwide demand. 22. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. Christian McVeigh, ladies and gentlemen.
And then again, you can be cold as ice.
The keyboardist for Fleetwood Mac.
Oh,
one of the great songs that they did. Joan Pride is our guest. That's her on bass. Right, Joan?
Really? Oh, sure. I wish
she's
I had some of the royalties.
She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and they've got an outstanding website that I encourage you to check out. I use it all the time. I'm a subscriber, so I get to go wandering around all over the place on their website. But
that's
if you're not,
scary.
I know it. Yeah, I leave little sacred relics
love
all
them.
Over your site,
yeah,
there, Joan.
Great.
And also, if you're not a subscriber, you can still use their site. It's a lot of good stuff there that's in the open, the public side. And then, of course, if you are a subscriber, you get to wander around like I do and really mine some of the genius that is Kiplinger. And you can also, but when you do that, you get to you'll be a subscriber to one or more of their outstanding publications, like the letter that Joan and I work off of every week. That's been in publication since 1923, that is. And that's their weekly flagship. And then there's three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there is this thing called the magazine, right, Joan?
You bet. A million years ago, it was called Changing Times, but now it's the Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
See, I wish you hadn't said that, Joan, because it actually became... was started the year I was born. So I don't like to think of that as being
didn't
a million
mean
years
you,
ago.
Sorry.
Yeah. But it's been around a long time, folks, and you can subscribe at kiplinger.com. They'll give you a 30-day free trial if you ask them real nice. And you can also call a phone number, right, Joan?
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask for the 30-day free trial. Joan, let's move over and talk about Congress. Kind of a surprise. I was surprised. I thought that what's his name was going to become the new majority leader, but John Boehner.
Roy Blunt.
Yeah, I just couldn't get his name out. Roy Blunt, because he was actually the acting leader, wasn't he?
Right.
And John Boehner from Ohio, handsome guy from Ohio, 6 handicap, I think, on golf. He got it. Now, what happened?
Well, he had the better tan.
Well, he sure did.
Mr. Boehner presented himself as more of a reform candidate. And from what I've read, the inside scoop that I can give you from this closed-door meeting, there was indications that different Republicans getting up to speak said, look, however good or bad Mr. Blunt is, he's still the face of the party.
That's right.
As connected to Mr. DeLay.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to at least make the American people realize that we're moving in a different direction. So Mr. Blunt could have been the best person in the world, but just because he was already in the leadership, they felt that they needed to try somebody new.
Guilt by association.
And they say that even Mr. Boehner was shocked that he won.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, however, keep in mind, though, that Mr. Boehner has also had positions in the leadership. Although, if I remember correctly, a few years ago when there was a famous palace coup among the Republican leadership, which I think at the time Mr. Gingrich was in power, and it failed, and he lost his I think he was chairman of the Republican conference, and he lost his leadership position.
Right.
So these different news reports that call him an outsider and a fresh face, that's not completely true.
Well, as far as most memories are concerned, it probably is. But he is less, of the qualified leaders, he is less tied to the old regime, so to speak, the delay regime. And so basically, Mr. Blunt was found guilty by association.
Exactly.
And now, how is Mr. Boehner going to be different from Mr. DeLay?
Well, we're saying, you know, Tom DeLay's nickname was the Hammer.
Yep.
And we're saying that Mr. Boehner isn't going to quite be able to exert the same kind of control over his colleagues.
Is he going to be kind of like the wiffle bat instead of the hammer?
Hopefully not that light for their sake.
Well, the thing that everybody, you know, kept pointing out that I talked to, Joan, is that, you know, Mr. DeLay got things done. He kept his folks in line, and he made the house work. I mean, he got things done.
He did.
You might not have liked his style, so it'll be interesting to see if a kinder, gentler majority leader in the form of Mr. Boehner can get things done.
That's right.
It'll be an interesting little thing over the next year or so to see what happens. And, of course, one big thing, even though this is not his job, it'll be interesting to see what happens in November during the elections.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was also an article in yesterday's New York Times saying that the Democrats on the Hill are concerned because they think there is a leadership vacuum. I'm not saying whether there is or not, but they believe that they could be capitalizing on the problems that the Republicans are having, and they are afraid that their message isn't clear enough for them to be doing that.
Isn't that kind of the classic challenge that the Democrats have right now, Joan?
The
Republicans are just stumbling all over themselves, but the
right.
Democrats have such a weak or non-existent message. They come across, Joan, as being what a friend of mine calls against-ivists. They don't have their own message. They're just against whatever the other
right.
person
and they're
has.
Realizing that, and they're figuring out they better get one.
But Joan, they keep saying that, but where is it coming from?
Right.
Their leaders of the Democrat Party are not... You know, they're not they're people. I mean, they got to get people like Birch Bayh up there, and those kinds of folks that are seen as, you know, as more reasonable people.
Sorry to correct you, but I think you mean Evan Bayh.
I meant Evan. Yeah, Birch was his father.
Yes, and he.
I guess I showed my age there, didn't I, Joan?
Well,
that was a little unfortunate, wasn't it?
That's
stand
all right.
by. Quick break. Oh me, Tintail. I'm Jim Blasingame, the old guy. I'll be back. Life is a gamble, all
along. Welcome back. Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball.
7-2. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and great song from the rock opera Tommy by The Who. Joan Pryde is our guest, and she plays a pretty mean pinball, too. And, Joan, let's move down and talk about, by the way, she's with the Kiplinger editors. Joan, let's talk about what's going on in Maryland, hard by to your state, Virginia there. Maryland is shooting itself in the foot with Walmart, isn't it?
Wow, and this is something I actually know a little about because it's been in the local press.
As opposed to the other things we've been talking about, is that what
but
you're saying, Joan?
Just bluff on the rest of it, but no. This is very interesting, and you know me. I am the world's most leftist liberal you ever met.
Yeah, that's what we love about you, Joan. That's not really true, folks, but go ahead.
But I find it bizarre that a state legislature would, as in this case what we're talking about, pass legislation to require large employers to provide health care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the stick here, there's no carrot. The stick is that if they don't, they pay this big tax to the state.
This is a designer law that's designed to only affect one employer, and that's Walmart.
Right, and we used to call these rifle shots, when we were talking about provisions on Capitol Hill. But I say large employers, but this is really aimed squarely at Walmart.
Because they're the only employer that fits the criteria of this bill.
Right, exactly.
And it's to make them provide more health care for their employees, at least 8% of payroll to go towards health benefits. And
right.
Joan, here's why they're shooting themselves in the foot. And I think you know this. You know about the distribution center, right?
No.
The Eastern Shore is having a kind of a tough time with the economy over there.
Okay.
And Walmart was going to build a distribution center and employ about 800 people. The ripple effect of those 800 jobs and that construction work on that economy was going to be worth a tremendous amount to the state of Maryland. Now, Walmart's saying, you know what? We don't have to do this in Maryland. If you're going to do this, and so the point is, whatever benefit, I read an article about this the other day, whatever benefit Maryland thinks that they're going to get by passing this law and making Walmart do what they're doing, they're going to lose more than that because Walmart's going to take their distribution center out of the state.
Right, they're going to take their football and go home.
See,
and I hate to say this, but I can't blame them.
Oh, no, you can't blame them.
I could because I'm liberal, but I just don't want to.
I'll tell you, Joan, that's why you're not liberal as you'd like to think you are, because you're reasonable. See, true liberals, Joan, you can't talk to them. But I can talk to you.
Well, same with true conservatives. You can't talk to them either.
Well, sometimes. But Joan, Michael Steele is the lieutenant governor of Maryland.
Right.
He's been on the show before. He's going to be on again real soon. And I'm going to talk to him about this and find out what's going on. I promise you, this is not the governor. This is not the doings of the governor or the lieutenant governor, because they're Republicans.
Well, and explain why. Explain the politics.
They're Republicans, and Maryland House and Senate are Democrat.
Right.
And
Maryland is a very Democrat state, too.
Very much so. It's one of those weird states, isn't it, like Massachusetts. You know, it's a Democrat state with Republican governors.
Well, but in this case, that was a strange campaign because the person he ran against was Kathleen Kennedy Townsend,
right,
who ran a very bad campaign.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think people in Maryland didn't want a Kennedy in charge of the state.
I really think they didn't.
I think that's exactly what happened.
Because there were plenty of Democrats before then.
Right, exactly. Joan, let's move on down, because I want to talk about something that's near and dear to your heart and mine, and this is the new technologies that are going to help the elderly cope on their own.
Now, could we clarify here, not because I'm elderly, my mother
or
is 85.
Yes, okay. And my father, who's now dead, we went through this with him in the last years of his life. Talk to us about some of this stuff.
Very exciting to me personally. It says new technologies meant to help the elderly cope on their own. And boy, if this can help them, you know, live at home and not go into a nursing home, this is terrific. Now, as what we're talking about is things that could monitor chronic conditions, diabetes, blood pressure, other things, just to be able to watch them and make sure that they're safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and drugs, keys, and other important things, that radio frequency, ID tags, lots of technology that can be installed. And, Joan, these things are not going to be expensive either, and maybe even paid for by the government in some cases, that will allow people to live at home and be happier, because I'll tell you, when you get that age, you want to be home.
No question about it.
Something about being home, I really hope that they can keep working on these things and get them out there to folks across the country.
I agree.
And help these elderly folks stay at home more. Hey, thanks, Joan, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
See you next week.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, she's liberal, but she's our liberal. But not quite as much as she'd like to think she is. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.